Okay, we are holding on Lamed Tes Amud Bey's last line. We started talking about various things that you're allowed and not allowed to do with grain or flour or whatever during Pesach because of issues with chametz. So more on that. So continuing with other rules like that. Amar Rabbi Yosef, lo lichlet inish trechiti bahadi hadadi. A person should not be choilet. We talked about yesterday that choilet means that you dunk them in boiling water, and that stops the and that prevents it from becoming chametz because it's boiled, and once it's boiled, it can't become chametz. And the point is, it gets boiled almost instantaneously because of the boiling hot water. So in principle, Medina de Gemara, we said you're allowed to do that. We mentioned in the Mishnah and in the Gemara yesterday, although we said also that already from the time of the Gaonim, we say that it's also to do that because people are not always expert in making sure that the chalita is done at the right temperature and for long enough and whatever, and therefore you have a potential problem of chametz. But in any case, back in the time of the Gemara, when it was still allowed to do chalita, so Rabbi Yosef says, "Lichlet inish trechiti bahadi hadadi." When you're doing this chalita, though, of dunking it in boiling water, you shouldn't do two grains of wheat at the same time. Do them one at a time. Dilma ozla choda v'yosva b'tziria dechaverta, because one of them may get wedged into the crack in the other one. Wheat kernels, if you ever look at a wheat kernel, you'll notice that that on one side of it there's a crack, there's a split running down the middle of it. Now later on the Amud, we're going to talk about where grain splits open because of chimutz. We're not talking about that point. We're talking about the wheat grain naturally has a cleft or a split running down one side of it. So now the problem is that one, if you do this chalita of two grains at the same time, then one of them may get stuck in the, may get wedged into the crack in the other one. Therefore, the heat of the water is not going to reach it from all four sides, from every possible side. But also the dechimutz, and therefore it may become chametz. Based on this, by the way. Now, nowadays we don't do chalita, but there are a couple of halachas that derive from this nowadays. First of all, Rishonim bring, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that ideally the matzahs in the oven shouldn't touch each other while they're baking. You shouldn't have the matzahs crowded so tightly together in the oven that they touch one another. Because of the same problem, where they're touching, they may not get thoroughly baked. Lemaisa, what it says in Shulchan Aruch is, ideally you should be careful of that, but if you didn't, then it's fine, b'dieved, because the fact is we do see the matzah gets baked all the way through, so there's not that much reason to be concerned that maybe it became chametz in that area. There is, though, a halacha, on the other hand, that if you find a matzah that was folded over, and this you find a lot of times in matzahs, not a lot, but you find sometimes in matzahs that you buy from the bakeries that there's a portion of the matzah that during the baking was folded over. That part, the minhag has become to answer it based on what we're saying over here, because that part that's folded over, the heat of the baking may not have penetrated all the way through as much as it did the rest of the matzah. After all, the matzah is supposed to be thin, and here it's thicker, and therefore you have that part potentially might be chametz. So what you do is the whole matzah you don't say the whole matzah is also, but you have to remove the folded over part as well as some matzah around that, like an etzba around or something. Another point from this.
By that logic, you could say that the matzah and the Beis Hamikdash, which was a tefach fig, should also have contained chametz.
No, because they always said it was made by Zrizim. They were very careful to make sure that it's not going to become chametz. We're talking about all matzah nowadays, where we're not such a Zrizim. And again, if you're talking about the regular thin matzah, there's not a problem. The problem is when you have this kind of area where the dough got folded over, and you know, it can happen, obviously enough, that, you have, while you're rolling out the dough, you have a portion of it that got folded over, or while you're putting it in the oven, let's say, rather, you have a portion of it that got folded over and baked like that. Another point, I think the Vilna Gaon says based on this, there's a din in Shulchan Aruch that when you're kashering kelim, you have to be careful not to have the various kelim that you're kashering touch each other. And that's also based on this same idea. In other words, because you have to have the boiling water has to be able to reach every side of the keli, and if they're touching each other, then they're not doing it at that point. Continues the Gemara, v'amar Abaya, lo lichrich inish treshi boili bahadi hadadi. By the same logic, also by a similar logic, when if you're going to toast if you're going to toast ears of grain, and we said yesterday that you could toast them and then you can use the flour of them, and then you can use the flour of them on Pesach, because again, once they're toasted, they're not going to be able to become chametz. But lelichrich inish treishi boili bahadi adadi. But you shouldn't do that with two stalks of grain next to each other. Dilma nafki maya mehai, because one of them, as you're roasting it in the oven or over the fire, juice comes out of one of them. It's a natural thing. You roast something, juice comes out of it. So it'll come out of one, or bala yidach. The other one is going to absorb that juice. But also the chimutz, and then it can become chametz. So you do one at a time. Amalei Rava. So Rava says to Abaye, Ihachi, if that's your problem, then afilo chodanami. Wouldn't you have the same problem even with only one stalk? Dilma nafik mehai resha uvala idach resha. That, after all, you might have juice might come out one end of it and be absorbed in the other end of it. And even you are not concerned about that. Elo Amar Rava. So Rava says, no, you're even allowed to do more than one together, because may peiris ninu, because after all, it's only fruit juice, or may peiris ain in machmitzin, and as we learned the other day, fruit juice does not make chametz. Now, we did mention over there that Rashi holds it doesn't make real chametz, but it makes chametz nuksha, which is still also on Pesach, it's just not chayiv kares. But here, where we're talking about that it's not even certain that it's going to go from, that's going to come out from one end and be absorbed into the other end, then according to that, we could be makel and say that it would be allowed. You don't have to do them one at a time, like Rava says. Like Abaye had said. And in fact, the Gemara says, v'hodr be Abaye mehahi. In fact, Abaye himself changed his mind for a different reason, not because he figured may pay this in machmitzin, but dechol agav madlaihu, because when it's in a way where the juice, where the liquid is falling out, is oozing out, loy mechamtzi, it's not going to make something else chametz on the way as it's traveling. And we see that to Omer Abaye, because we also find Abaye says, "Hai chatzva da avishna." You have a jar in which you dry the in which you toast and dry the stalks of grain. So like this, you could have them just plain over the fire, but more usually the way would be you'd put them in this container, and then you'd put the container in the oven, and the grain would get toasted inside it. So Abaye says, schifa shari, if you turn the container upside down, then it's mutter, because then any liquid that oozes out of the stalks of the grain while it's being toasted will drip out. So therefore, it's not going to cause. So we see that Abaye is allowing, because it's dripping out, then therefore it's not going to make anything chametz on the way. But he says zekifa oser. But if you have it right side up, then it would be oser, because then what happens is it's not just a matter of that the juice is oozing out and dripping away. Now it's staying inside the container and it's getting absorbed maybe into the other stalks over there. So you see, therefore, the fact is that so that means Abaye changed his mind, because if he held, like he held originally, that you're not even allowed to do two together, because one of them might exude liquid and the other one is going to absorb it, then it wouldn't matter whether the container that you have them in is right side up or upside down. Either way, you'd still have the same problem. That as liquid comes out of one, even while it's on its way to dripping out of the container, it's going to be absorbed into another one. And now Abaye is saying that if the container is upside down, then you're allowed to. So that shows that Abaye changed his mind. Rava also disagrees and says, "Afilu zkifa nami shori." You would even be allowed to do it with the container right side up, because again, may peiris ninhu, because we're talking about it's juice from fruit or from produce or whatever. Or may peiris in machmitzin, that kind of thing is not able to make chametz. At least it's not able to make full fledged chametz. Okay. So again, the halacha technically is like Rava, that you are allowed to do them, you're allowed to do many, many stalks together, and you're allowed to do it in the container right side up. But again, we don't do that, because this kind of thing of toasting them in an oven, again, we're not necessarily know how to do it in a way that's going to prevent them from becoming chametz. Okay. Tana Rabbanon. So we talked about a few days ago about lassisa, which is where you take the grain and you wet it. You mix it in water, or you soak it in water, or you sprinkle water on it or whatever. And the idea of it is that's a normal part of the process of making clean white flour, because what it does is that then once you've soaked the grain a little bit, then if you pound it in a mortar, it's easier to get the outer shell, the bran, off, and then you can then when you grind the wheat, you're gonna have cleaner white flour. So we talked about it the other day in connection with the menachos. We said that even though there are certain dispensations that we allow as far as the menachos in the Bais HaMikdash, we said you can knead them with warm water, which makes a better dough, even though when it comes to matzah, you can't knead with warm water because you're concerned it's going to become chametz. But in that case over there, we're talking about, in that case over there, it's done by zrizim, and even if it's not done by zrizim, it's done in the Bais HaMikdash, in the place where zrizim are in charge, where the kohenim are in charge, and therefore they'll supervise it and make sure it's done in a way that's not chametz. On the other hand, we said over there that to do lassisa with the wheat for the korbanos mincha, that you can't do because that's done outside the azara and there's no zrizim around, and you may do it for too long and it may become chametz. So now we did the one exception we said over there is that you do lassisa when it comes to the barley for the korban omer, because that's being done under the supervision of Beis Din. It's a korban sibur. So now we're going to talk about this lassisa in connection with Pesach, in connection with making matzah. So Tana Rabbanan, ein loisisin se'odin b'Pesach. You're not allowed to do lassisa with barley on Pesach. The im losas, if you did, then nisbaku, then if the barley grains split open. Now, unlike wheat, we said before, it has a natural split in it. Barley does not. On the other hand, as the Gemara is going to say soon, wheat is tougher than barley and doesn't absorb liquid as easily. So we're going to talk about that point. But right now we're focusing on barley. We'll talk about wheat soon. So if you did do lassisa with barley, nisbaku asuris, if the grains split open, meaning, so what happens? The grain absorbs liquid and eventually it splits open, sort of like popcorn, although of course it doesn't form a cloudy thing like that. So it splits open, showing that it absorbed a lot of water. So then asuris, then they're also lo nisbaku mutaris, if they didn't split open, then they're mutter. Now, Rashi uses the expression, divadim im maharos lahachmetz. When they split open, it shows that they're quickly becoming chametz. You actually have a machlokas rishonim on that, whether that means that once they're split open, they are chametz, or whether that means that they're about to become chametz. And we'll talk about soon some nafkaminas of that. Rabbi Yossi says it's not necessarily all lost. You can soak them in vinegar, and the vinegar will help shrink them down, so that way they won't become chametz as fast. So according to Rashi, what we're saying is if you see the grains are swelling up, then you immediately put them in vinegar in order to stop the swelling process. It comes out from the way that Rashi is saying that if they actually did split open, then already it's too late to do anything with that. Then putting them in vinegar is not going to help, because then it sounds like then already they're split open, they're chametz, and putting them in vinegar is not going to save that. On the other hand, according to the Rosh, that we're saying, okay, so you have a machlokas rishonim on it. You have the Rosh on one side, you have the Maharam Chalava, and another number of other rishonim on the other side. If we say, like the Maharam Chalava and so forth, that once they're split, they're already chametz, then Rabbi Yossi is not saying once they're split, put them in vinegar, it's not going to help. Then it's going to be more like what Rashi is saying over here. If you see that they're swelling up and they're going to soon split, then according to Rabbi Yossi, you put them in vinegar and it'll help stop that process. According to the Rosh, that even once they're split doesn't automatically mean they're chametz, means they're about to become chametz, then it could mean, according to the Biyasi, even at that point, you put them in vinegar, and that'll help stop the process of it becoming chametz, even after it's split open. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel ein halacha ke Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. Vinegar doesn't help for that purpose. If they're split open, then they're either chametz or about to become chametz. Actually, there is the Rif over here on the Gemara learns that even though the they were saying they would be also once they're split, he says that would only be if you're eating them by themselves. But if they got mixed into a tabshil, then he says it would be mutter, because after all, it's really only a suffix whether they're whether they're actually chametz. Apparently, he holds like the Rosh that they're not actually chametz yet. And then you have on top of that another suffix whether it's actually whether the taste is spreading to the rest of the food. So therefore it would be mutter. And you have there are a lot of complicated halachas that the Rishonim talk about based on all of this. Based on these kinds of questions, if you find a grain of wheat or whatever inside a matzah, if you find it inside a chicken that you're preparing on Pesach, so you have a lot of different complicated dinim of what to do. There are certain cases. There are Rishonim, for example, who say that if you find a grain of wheat in a matzah, then not only that particular matzah is also, but all the matzahs that were baked in the oven at the same time are also. So in Shulchan Aruch it brings that concept, but it says okay in Hefs and Merubah then you can be makel and say that maybe only that matzah itself is also, and in some cases we say not even the whole matzah, just part of the matzah, and so on and so forth. There's a lot of different variables in that, and in Siman Tov Samach Zayin in Orach Chaim, half of the siman, it's a long siman, and half that deals with these kinds of dinim of finding grains of wheat in matzah or in other food on Pesach. Okay. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Ma'ukva, Loi Nisbaku Mamash. When we say that if the grains burst open, if they split open, then they're also, doesn't even mean that they actually split open. Ela Kol She'ilu Manichan Al Pichavis. What it is if they're so swollen that if you were to put them on top of a barrel of wine, and then the air that comes, the carbon dioxide, whatever, that comes up from the barrel of wine would cause vehemnis bakas me'alehin, that then that would be enough. That would be the extra little push that it needs to split it open. Then Ma'ukva says that would already be also. Tosfos brings a different girsa from Rabbeinu Chananel, not on top of a barrel of wine, but on top of abu shokaloyim, which is it's a container. And so it's a keli that they use for making toasted grain. So before we talked about this container that you may put in the oven with the grain inside it, you have another way of doing it where you have a container, like a tube or something with holes in it, and you put the grain inside it and hold that over the fire, and that way, because of the holes, the heat of the fire is able to get in and toast the grain. So according to that, Girsa, then Ma'ukva is saying that if the grains are swollen to the point where if you put them in the Abuv Shokaloyim, then the heat would cause them to split open, then it's considered as though they're already split open, and therefore the same dinim would apply that they be also. Or Shmuel Amar Nisbaku Mamash, where Shmuel says no, only if they're actually split open. Never mind this business of if you put it on a barrel of wine or if you put it in this roasting pan or whatever. No, we're talking about only if it actually split open, then it would be usur, but not if it's only swollen and about to split open. And in fact, the Gemara tells, Ovad Shmuel Uvda Bedura Debe Bar Choshu. In fact, Shmuel, one time Paskin, Halacha Lamaisa, in the village of Bar Choshu, Nisbaku Mamish, that only if they're actually split open are they also, because they had a case like that. The grains were swollen from water. They hadn't actually split open yet, but you could evaluate that they were swollen enough that they would split if you put them on top of the barrel of wine or in the roasting pan. And still, Shmuel said that it's allowed because it didn't actually split open. Okay. So far what we're saying is that you shouldn't do this lasisa, but b'diavad, if you did, then as long as it didn't make the grain swell up to the point where it would split open, then it's mutter. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rabba, Baal Nefesh lo yiltois. A Baal Nefesh, which means Rashi defines as a chassid, or on the side over here, there's a different view, say, Yore Shemaim, a chored al nafshay, a Yore Shemaim is concerned for his neshama. Rabba says, lo yiltois, he should not be doing lasisa. So the question, what do you mean by your Baal Nefesh? Why mention specifically the Baal Nefesh? I feel the kula almanami. Nobody should. Dehotanya ein lois sinsa un Pesach. We just started the Braisa saying you shouldn't do it on Pesach with barley. Okay, we said if you did it, b'dieved, then we can talk about whether the barley swelled and split open or not. But at least the b'raisa is saying you shouldn't for everybody. So why is Rabbah saying specifically the Baal Nefesh? The answer is hochikarma. What Rabbah means to say is a Baal Nefesh afilu chitin b'shriri lo yiltos. What he means is that a Baal Nefesh shouldn't do lasisa even with wheat, which is harder. Barley is softer, so barley is going to absorb water a lot faster, and it's much more likely to get to the point where it swells and splits open. Wheat kernels are harder. So, and then the Braisa before didn't say anything about wheat, but Pashtos, according to the Braisa, you could do lasisa with wheat because not as likely to get to the point of becoming chametz just from being soaked in water. So therefore, Rabbi is telling us that a Baal Nefesh would be concerned about that also, even with wheat. On the other hand, Amalei Rab Nachman, but Rab Nachman says, Man Detzayis Leila Abba, anybody who listens to Abba, meaning Rabba, because Rashi says he's calling him Abba as a title of respect, Loshen Rabbonus, another way of understanding it is that Rabba's actual first name was Abba. There's a letter from Rabbi Shira Goyen, besides his very famous Igeres about Jewish history, there's another follow-up Igeres that he has about the titles of people in the Gemara. And he explains that the names of many Amiroyim that begin with a resh are actually short for Reb and the name. For example, he says Rabba and Rava are both short for Reb Abba. So according to that, it would come out that Rabba's actual first name was Abba. Anyway, so Rav Nachman is saying, whoever listens to Abba, whether he's using Abba as a title of respect or whether he just means it as his first name, Ochel Nama De'ipusha, he's going to be eating moldy bread. In other words, without lasisa, you're not going to be able to get clean flour. So don't listen to him and say that then you're going to be a Baal Nefesh. You're not going to, because then the result is you're not going to have good quality matzah. In fact, some of the Rishonim point out the lasisa, besides that it helps, like we said, to remove the outer layer of the kernel so that you get cleaner flour, it's also, practically speaking, it also removes dirt and whatever from the grain. So like this, if you don't do it, then you have dirt and everything mixed in, and it doesn't really make good masa. And Rav Nachman says, don't be so machmer on it. Even a Baal Nefesh shouldn't need to. Dehabed of Huna lasisi. After all, in the house or in the yeshiva of Rav Huna, they used to do lasisa for wheat for matzahs. Obey Rav Ba'oven lasisi. And in the house of Rav Ba'oven, they also did. Or Rav Ba'avua, it brings on the side of a hirgivsa. So the point is, in other words, Rav Nachman says that there's no reason to have to be machmer on it. Okay. Lasisa, again, we said, means that you take the grain and you soak it or mix it or whatever with water in order to soften it. And the idea is that then what you do is you take it out of the water, then you pound it in a mortar, and now the outer shell, the bran of it, comes off more easily, and now you'll have cleaner flour. That's the thing. So we're saying, so when it comes to barley, which absorbs water more, we're saying that you shouldn't do it l'chatchila, but b'dieved, if you did, then we can talk about whether it swelled up to the point where it's going to split or not. And we have the machlokas of Ma'ukva and Shmuel, whether it actually has to split open or whether it's enough that it's about to split open. On the other hand, with wheat, so far we have Rav Nachman is saying and bringing proofs from Rav Huna and Rav Ba'oven that you're allowed to do it even l'chatchila. And Rabba is saying that still, a Baal Nefesh shouldn't do it with wheat either. Continues the Gemara, but Rabba Amar Osu Liltos. Rabba, on the other hand, says, you're not allowed to do Lasisa even with wheat. So the question is, Elo HaDetanya Ein Lois Sin Sa'urin BePesach. What do you mean, though? We said the Braisa before, you're not allowed to do Lasisa with barley on Pesach, implying Sa'urin Hudaloi, so barley not, because barley is soft. It absorbs water more easily. Ha chiti shori, implying that wheat would be mutter. The answer is, according to Rava, on the contrary, loy midboya karma. Rava would say the Braisa is mentioning barley because, on the other hand, there's a bigger chiddush with barley. Loy midboya chitin, needless to say, Rava would explain the Braisa, that you can't do it with wheat. Kiven de ispet syria, because, as we said at the top of the Amud, wheat grains have a cleft, that have a crack, that a natural crack that runs down the middle of it. Therefore, Aili Bahumaya. So there's a bigger chance that water is going to stay in there and make it chametz even after you took it out of the water. Aval Saidi Dishi, But barley grains are smooth. Ema shapu dummy. You might have thought it would be fine. Kamash walon. And therefore, the Braisa is mentioning barley. But in other words, according to Rava, the Braisa means definitely wheat you're not allowed to, and even barley you're not allowed to. And then, b'dievet, if you did, then we can talk about whether it swelled up enough to split open, etc. Okay. Hada amar Rava mutter lilsis. Then Rava changed his mind and said you're allowed to do lasisa. With wheat, at least. Barley, maybe not, because the Braisa said not, but with wheat you would be allowed to. And how does Rava get that? Tanya, because we learned in a Braisa, we learned a few days ago. Yotzen mepas nekiya, you can be yotzen the mitzvah of matzah with clean bread, meaning white flour matzah. Vehadrah, you can also be yotzen with pumpernickel. As we said, hadrah is like loshen sagi nahar, it has no hadar. So we see, therefore, that you can be, so if you're yotze b'pas nekiya, v'yesha nekiya v'loy l'sisa. Now, how are you going to get clean flour unless you do l'sisa? So obviously, it must be mutter to do it. Esveir a papa l'rova. However, a papa says to Rava, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, ha'kmachin v'aslosis shom nachrim, regular flour and fine flour of goyim. Shel kforim tahorim, if they come from villages. Now, this is not in connection with Hilchos Pesach. This is a din in connection with Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. So you have to now midrabanan goyim are considered tame. So is their flour tame as well because they touched it? So it depends. Shel kforim, if it comes from villages tahorim, then they're still tahor because they weren't mukshel kabel tumah. Because in villages they don't care so much about making the bread. About making the flour quite so clean and white, so therefore they don't bother with lasisa. So therefore the grain wasn't mukshel kabel tumah. So therefore the flour is fine. It shall crack and tame. And on the other hand, from big cities they're tameh because then, and then in the big cities they do lasisa. So the point is, we see the kfarim maitaima. Now, why are we saying the ones from the villages are tahor? Lav mishum de loylasi. Presumably, it's because they don't do lasisa, and therefore the grain never became wet. So therefore, it's not mukshel kabel tumah. Vika kori leisoylas, and still the braisa is mentioning kmochin and slothis. It's mentioning fine flour. Now, fine flour involves it's clean white flour. So obviously there is a way. So obviously even without lasisa, the kokori lay solus, it can still be called solus. So obviously, you Rava bring the proof. You were allowed to do lasisa for the wheat for matzahs because it says that you can use white flour for matzahs. But we see from this braisa that you can have white flour without doing lasisa. So then your proof falls away. Because that's the thing, because we're saying in the villages, because they don't do lasisa, therefore the flour is not tame from the fact that the goyim touched it. So obviously that means they don't do lasisa over there. So and yet they have solus. The answer is taguma akimcha. So Rava says, okay, that's not a big problem. What the braisa means is hakmochin, whether from hakmochin, meaning from either place, from villages or from big cities, and aslosis would specifically be from big cities. In other words, the braisa is not telling us a case of solus from the villages. You're right. You actually can't get solus in the villages because the only way to get solus would be with lasisa, and we're saying in the villages they don't do lasisa, and therefore the flour is not makabel tumah. The flour is not makabel tumah. So what we're saying is, in other words, so when the braisa says hakmochim vaslosis shokforim versus shokrakin, it's not telling us four possibilities: kemach from villages, kemach from cities, solus from villages, solus from big cities. It's talking about you have regular flour from villages or solus from big cities. Because in big cities, the only way you're going to get solus is by doing lasisa, and in big cities they do that, therefore the flour is makabel tumah. Okay. Basa denufik, then after Rava left, Omar, then Rapapa says to himself, he felt bad, my time ema le meha. Why didn't I think to bring to a contradiction to Rava from a different source? Okay, that braisa about akmochim vaslosis, fine, Rava was able to say that the braisa doesn't necessarily disprove him. But the next thing would have been a much stronger counterproof. We said before that the wheat of Menachos, you don't do lasisa, because we said it's done outside the Azara, and there's concern that it might become chametz, and yet we call it solus. So we see that it is possible to get solus, clean white flour, without doing lasisa. So Rav Papa felt bad. Why didn't I think to ask that as a question on Rava? You're trying to bring a proof that you can do lasisa because you're allowed to use white flour for matzah, implying that lasisa has to be done. But we see that they had white flour for the menachos, and they still didn't do lasisa. Now, that's the point. We said because there are no zrizim where the lasisa is done, therefore we don't allow it. But nevertheless, we see that the flour from menachos is called solas. It's called clean white flour. So the lasisa, if it was going to be done, wouldn't be done in the Bais Mikdash, because the person comes to the Bais Mikdash with the flour already. So you see that not necessarily do you have to do lasisa in order to get clean flour, and therefore Rava's proof falls away. So what would Rava do with that? Okay, so the Papa didn't have a chance to ask Rava that contradiction, but what would Rava do with that? So there's a couple of answers. One of them, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, says that maybe, first of all, some of the Mefarshim say that, in fact, maybe Rava would hold that, maybe Rava would hold that Braisa is wrong, and in fact, they did do Lasisa of, it wasn't a Braisa, it was a statement of Shmuel. So fine, Shmuel's an Amora, Rava's an Amora, he's entitled to argue with Shmuel, so Shmuel can say they didn't do lasisa. Rava could argue and say they did. But there's an answer also that Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz gives, which is there's a difference between when it comes to Pesach, where if it becomes chametz, there's an issur kares, people are going to be more careful with it. Versus when it comes to menachos, if they become chametz, there's no issur kares involved. Worst that happens is the mincha is possible. Maybe the person who's makriv such a mincha gets malchus. So therefore, people are likely to be less careful with it. So when it comes to Rava can say, sure, they didn't do lasisa for the wheat for menachos because there's too much of a chance that people are going to be careless, figuring there's no issur kares involved anyway. I'll just do it whatever, and if it becomes chametz, no big deal. As opposed to by Pesach, people know there's an issur kares involved. Okay, continues the Gemara. Hada amar Rava mitzvah liltos. Then Rava continues and rethinks it and says, not only you allowed, so Rava has gone through all different possibilities. First, Rava said you're not allowed to do lasisa. Then he said you're allowed to. And now he's saying there's a mitzvah too. Yeah. Shanema, because the pasuk says, Ushmautim es ha-matzes. The pasuk says you should guard the matzes. Now, what are you guarding them from becoming chametz? E loy deboy lasisa. If the wheat didn't require if the wheat didn't require lasisa, shimur lamai, then what are you guarding it against? What is there to guard against? At what point would you be starting to guard it against becoming wet? E shimur delisha, are you saying that you'd only guard it from when you start kneading it, because that's when you actually put water into the flour? Shimur delisha, lav shimuhu, that kind of thing. If it's only guarded from the time when you knead it, that wouldn't be from when you put in the water and start kneading it, that wouldn't be considered shimur at all. So obviously, therefore, there must be a shimmer that starts at an earlier point. And what would that earlier point be? When it was still in the form of grain. And why would you need to be shomer it then? What's the concern then? The concern would be that you. So therefore, it's an idea is you have to do lasisa, and the Torah is telling you do lasisa, but do it in a way that you're very careful not to allow it to become chametz. So where do we see that shimur from when it's needed is not considered shimur? The Amar Rav Huna, b'tzeikus shel nochrim. Rav Huna says that if you have dough that was made by goyim, so Rashi says it was made by goyim, and you can see that it didn't become chametz. We're going to learn in the next perek that there are certain physical changes in the dough that you can see when it first starts becoming chametz. Not bubbles, actually. The Mishnah describes over there that you see. First you see it becomes pale, like it becomes a bit of a lighter color, and then you start having that cracks start forming in it. So at that point, yeah, similar to bubbles, I guess. So at that point, you know that it's becoming chametz. So you see, in the case of this dough made by the goy, that it's not like that. Actually, though, there are a number of Rishonim that disagree with that, and they say, wait a minute, how can you trust? I mean, the goy may be making it in his own kalim. He might have put in sourdough without you seeing, and just it hasn't had a chance to become chametz yet. How can you say that you can rely on such physical characteristics? So there's a few other explanations what we mean by betzekas shel nachrim over here. One of them means that you supplied the flour and all the everything, and just the goy is making it in your house. So it's only a matter if it wasn't made l'shem matzah mitzvah. It's only a problem that it wasn't made l'shem matzah mitzvah because a goy can't have that. A goy is not able to have that kavana in mind. But you know that there's no actual chametz in it. Be that as it may, No, tummy we don't care about. We're all tummy mess nowadays, and we still eat matzah. Yeah, but even in those times, you're allowed to eat tummy food, remember? Unless it's truma or maizasheni or kodshim, you're allowed to eat it when it's tummy. So, yeah. Okay. So, b'tzekas shol nochrim, so dough that was made by goyim, according to any of these definitions, adam mamalik kresim ahen, then on Pesach night, a person can fill up his stomach with them. He can eat as much of them as he wants because they're not chametz. But uvavad sheyichol kezayis matzah ba'achroina, as long as he eats a kezayis of matzah at the end, which means this is talking about when there was a korban pesach, then you ate the main mitzvah of matzah. Then was to eat it together with the korban pesach. Al matzah sumerorim yechluhu. Nowadays we have the afikoman to correspond to that. So therefore, so in that case, he doesn't have, so most of the matzah that he's eating is not shmura matzah. He has one kezias of shmura matzah at the end, and nur he's yotze, which, by the way, mentions that in Shulchan Aruch. Suppose you have, even nowadays, a person, let's say, doesn't have enough shmura matzah for the whole Seder. Then the main thing is you should eat shmura matzah for the afikoman. Anyway, so bachroina ein barushona loy. So we're saying that he's only yotze the mitzvah only if he ate. So in other words, what are we saying? So only the matzah that he eats at the end, kezayis matzah bachroina. With that, he's yotze the mitzvah of matzah, but barushona loy. But the earlier ones, when he took the dough that was made by goyim and baked it and made and then baked it and made matzah out of it, he's not yotze the mitzvah of matzah with that. My timer. Now, why is that? Mishum deloy ovid b'hushimur. Obviously, the reason is because shimur wasn't done because again, that's the proof is so the question is v'leved le shimur mi'afia ve'elach. Why don't we say that when you're getting it ready to so we're saying the goy needed it, but we're saying, but after that, let's say you take over, and after that, let's say you're rolling it out and basting it and put it in the oven. Why don't we say that once you do shimur at that point to make sure it doesn't become chametz, and that's considered a valid shimur. El alav shmamino. So Rava says. So Rava finishes his proof. So therefore, you see from that. Shimur me'ikra be'inan, we need a shimur at an earlier point. So if we need an earlier point, what would that point be? That would be when it's still grain and you do lasisa on it. So that's Rava's proof, therefore, that you're not only mutter, but you have to do lasisa in order to be makai in this mitzvah of shimur, because otherwise there's nothing to be guarding it against. That's, we'll get to that. We'll get to the Shas Seder. Wait. Yeah. So the Gemara asked Umimai, who says that's a valid proof? Maybe in fact, if you do shimur only beginning from the time of the kneading, then it's good. Dilma shiny hosa. Maybe it's different. In this case, the reason why it's no good, the reason why you're not yotze the mitzvah of matzah with it, is the beidna denochus l'shimur, because when shimur comes into play, which is when the flowers, when the water is poured into the flower, loy avad lo shimur, at that point, from then on, shimur has not been done because the goy is doing it and the goy's shimur is not considered a shimur. You yourself have to be guarding it and doing it l'shem matzah mitzvah, and you're not. Or actually, we talked about the other day. The Alter Rebbe says doesn't necessarily have to be the Shem Matzah Mitzvah per se, as in this is for the matzah that's going to be eaten on the first night. It's enough that you have kavanah that this is matzah that can be eaten any time during Pesach. No. We're talking. No, so that's the thing. Right. So ideally you use Shmura Matzah for the whole Seder, for the whole Pesach, in fact, right. But we're saying if you don't have enough Shmura Matzah, then the main thing is to eat Shmura Matzah for the Afikoman. Okay. So anyway, so maybe then what we would say is like this. You have to consider, again, there are many different times when you could say that shimur kicks in. Rava is trying to prove that shimur kicks in when it's still in the form of grain, and therefore he says you do lasisa. And then based on that, then you start doing shimur from that point. From that point, you're making sure it's already contacted water at that point. So from then on, make sure that it's not becoming chametz. On the other, then we were saying that, so that, then we're talking about this case where the goy is kneading the dough. So you could say, maybe shimur before the water is put into the flour is not relevant. You don't need it. You only need from when the water is put into the flour. But over here, you actually don't have shimur at that point, because at that point you have the goy kneading the dough, and the goy can't do shimur because he can't be having in mind that it's l'shem matzah. Aval hecha de beidna de nachas the shimur ovid lo shimur. But you could say that maybe if from when shimur kicks in, namely when the water is put into the flour, then you're doing shimur. Hochinami, maybe indeed the shimur delisha habi shimur. Maybe indeed just having shimur from when it's needed would be good enough. You don't have a solid proof from this case, from this braisa, but betzekas shal nachrim, that you need to have shimur any time before the kneading process starts, before you put the water into the flour. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, "V'afilo hochi lehoder be Rava." Nevertheless, even though Rava couldn't find a proof for his opinion from this braisa, and originally he had said that he's trying to use this braisa as a proof, the first braisa, or not the braisa, he tried to use the pasuk Shmarta Masamatzvus as a proof for his shitta, and we said, nevertheless, though it's not a solid proof because maybe you only need Shmira Mishas Lisha, maybe you only need Shmira from when it's being needed. Nevertheless, Rava didn't change his mind. That he held that you need shimur sometime before that. Because Rava said to the people who are turning over the bundles of grain. So you have after the grain is harvested, you have to make it into bundles, and then you take the bundles from one point from one place to another. So you have the people who are making up the bundles of grain. No, in a bundle, it's still grain. It hasn't even been threshed yet. It's still in the form of stalks. Yeah, bundles of stalks of grain. Yeah. So, right. So, what he tells them, when you're doing it, kimat chitu, when you're turning over, when you're tying up and making up those bundles, hafichu l'shum mitzvah. Have in mind that you're doing it l'shem matzah, or l'shem mitzvah. Alma kasava, shima mi'ikra mitchilosav ad seif ha'benen, which goes to show, therefore, that Rava holds that you need shimur from the beginning, all the way from the beginning to the end. They have to be Jewish workers, obviously. Yeah. So now, so Tosfos says in that case, then how is Rava? So still, Rava is still trying to hold by his opinion that mitzvah liltos. So how is the proof? Maybe we're saying over here, you're saying you need shimur all the way from when it was harvested, so that, or at least from when it's being tied up in bundles. So then, in that case, then automatic. So at that point, you have shimur. So why would you need to do lasisa in order to have shimur? So Tosfos says because after all, I mean, the main shimur is not so much that it should be l'shem matzah mitzvah, but that it shouldn't become chametz. Now when you're harvesting it and when you're tying it up, there's not really much of a concern that it's going to get wet at that point. So the shimur you're doing at that point is not a real shimur. It is. I mean, you are checking that no water comes on it, but the real shimur would be once water comes on it to make sure from that point on that it doesn't become chametz. And what would be that first point where water could come on it? Lasisa. So that is why Rava is saying that nevertheless we see that lasisa should be done. So one second. So we'll talk about the actual halacha in a minute. And the Gemara finishes off this discussion. Ma'bre de Ravina, man ketela ime ba'arbe. His mother, Ma'bre de Ravina's mother would store for him wheat from the harvest for Pesach. She would put them, she would do shimur to begin with, ba'arbe in troughs, like in little containers, you know, in a bunch of different little containers, and then store it away until closer to Pesach when they would make the matzah for him. So that way, in other words, so you had shimur from when it was harvested, and she would guard it for him. So based on this Gemara, you have a machloikas Rishonim. You have a few different possible ways to understand the maskana of the Gemara. When do you need shimur from? Do you need mishas tzira from when it's harvested? That you make sure, like Rava is saying, that to make sure you have in mind it's l'shem mitzvah and that it's not going to get wet, or is it good enough if it's Mishas Tchina? A number of Rishonim point out, even though the Gemara doesn't mention over here the grinding, but practically speaking, the grinding is the first time when there's a realistic chance that water is going to come in contact with it, because mills where they ground flour were mostly water mills. They were mostly run by a current of water. So that might be the first time that you need shimur. And then the third possibility is maybe only Mishas Lisha from the kneading, as the Gemara was saying over here. So as far as Lasisa, so Lamaisa, even though Rava is saying over here you're supposed to do Lasisa, Lamaisa we go like the Amiroyim earlier in the Sugya, who say that you don't do Lasisa, but if you did, then you can talk about whether the grain split open or not. So then, so nowadays, how they make the white, I don't know how they did it in the olden days, how they do it nowadays. Well, so we said there is some way of being able to make white flour without lasisa, because after all, we said according to Shmuel, they didn't do lasisa by the menachos, and they still had white flour. So it's possible to do. It's just harder. That's how they do it nowadays. I'm given to understand they have some kind of dry process that doesn't involve water that makes it easier to remove the bran. What it is exactly, I don't know. Whatever the case. So we don't do lasisa as far as, but the question is still in the Gemara we're talking about here about these three possibilities. You have these few possibilities of when you have to have it. When is it shomer? When is it guarded from the time of harvesting, from the time of grinding, or from the time of kneading? So all three opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch. What it says is the ideal way would be Meshach Tzira, and that's how when we talk about Shmura Matzah, unspecified, it means Meshach Tzira, and you'll often find on the box of the Matzah, it'll explicitly say that it's a Shomur Meshach Tzira, yeah. If you can't manage that, then you're allowed to do. Then you're allowed to have meshas tchina, and that's it's not the ideal, but you can use that. And at a pinch, you can even use meshas lisha, which also gets into an interesting point about can you use flour that you can you just buy a bag of flour from the store and use it for matzahs? So the natural thing we would always think is, of course not. But actually, based on all of this, if you only need shmira meshas lisha. If you're in a place where the flour is not necessarily made with a lasisa process, maybe you would be allowed to. Because after all, you have then a bag of flour that you buy in the store is not necessary. There's no particular reason to think if this is a place where lasisa is not done regularly. Let's say, for example, again, lasisa is only needed in order to get clean white flour. So let's say you buy a bag of whole wheat flour. There's no particular reason to assume that lasisa was done with it. So therefore, in Prince, if we say that you only need Shmira Meshas Lisha, which b'dieved you can if you have no other alternative, then you would actually be able to buy flour from the store and use it for matzahs. So obviously we're not soimach on that as a lachatchila dika thing because we're able to get matzah that's shmura meshas ktsira. But for example, you hear sometimes of stories of Jews in concentration camps where they were able somehow or other to get a hold of some flour and bake matzahs. Obviously that flour wasn't shmura meshas ktsira, but in an emergency situation like that, it's valid because you have poskim who say that you only need shmura meshas lisha, that only from when the flour comes in contact with water, namely when you're kneading the dough, that then you need Shmira from then on. So in a pinch like that, they're able to do that. Continues the Gemara. Hahu arba dechiti. There was once a boat full of wheat. And it's funny, we have arbi on first. We have an arbi before the two dots over here, where Rashi defines it as a reva, meaning like a container, a wide flat container. And here we have the word arba, which means a boat. I guess there's a certain connection. Boats in those times were often maybe like canoes.
What happened if that was shallow? What happens if it rains? What happens if it rains? There's a strong rain. What is the halacha?
So if it rains, then you have a problem. In fact, actually, since nowadays since we do hold like the poskim, we say that you have to have shmira meshas ktsira. So even the harvest itself, ideally, should take place on a clear day. For example, the Friedrich Rebbe describes in Lakota Deburim the story of how they used to harvest the wheat from matzahs in Lubavitch back in the day, where there was an estate owned by a chassid, Rav Zalman Shabiner, and they would go there every year to harvest the grain for matzah. And he describes how the conditions were. It would have to be a clear day, and it hadn't rained for 3 days before that, or something like that, and then they would harvest it. But yeah, now that we're saying, according to the poskim, that you need shmira meshas tzira, then yes, if it rained on it, then you would have a problem. So therefore, they have to make sure as soon as possible. After we learned even a few days ago, we learned there's even the possibility that the grain could become chametz while it's still attached to the ground if it's fully ripened and then you leave it over there. So yes, you would have to be careful of such things. You would have to be careful that that it doesn't rain on it, etc. Yeah.
How much would the grain would be open to consider it as chametz?
So if the grain bursts open, then we said it's chametz. We said if it doesn't actually burst open, but it's about to, then we said we still have the opinion of ma'ukva, which I think is accepted la halacha, that we still say it's considered chametz. So yeah, if you have in halacha, then it talks about if the grain has become wet in any way, then you have problems with it. So therefore, yeah, you would have to make sure. Bidyevedika situations where then you could say you check whether how much it's swelled up, etc. But obviously we try to make sure that no water at all touches it, and therefore so if you see that rain is coming, then yeah, you'd have to cover it up. You'd have to quickly get it indoors. Well, so if it's growing, then as long as it's growing, you don't have a problem. The problem is once it's completely ripe, then you have to harvest it as soon as possible. What would you do if you see it's about to rain and the grain is completely ripe? I guess you would cover it with a tarp or something. I don't know.
So you have to check every kernel on every stalk, basically.
It's not so much that you have to check every kernel on every stalk. If you know that rain has not fallen on your crop, and you know that afterwards in the field when you're harvesting it there are no puddles, etc., then you don't have to check every individual grain, because then you can rely on the chazaka. There's no reason to assume that anything became wet. If it rained or if there were puddles over there, then you would have to be careful of anything that was near there. Yeah.
But if it rained a day ago, 2 days ago, what?
If it rained a day ago or 2 days ago, so again, if the grain wasn't completely ripe, you don't have to worry about it. Listen, I mean, obviously the grain needs rain in order to grow in the first place, right? We're only talking about if it's fully ripe. So once it's fully ripe, then the farmer needs to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's go on. The Gemara says, now, who arba? There was a boat. How arba dechiti? There was a boat full of grain. The Tava B'chishta, which sank in Chishta, which Rashi says is the name of a river. So now the question is, what do we do with this grain? It was soaked in the water over there. It may well have become chametz. Shaya Rava L'zabuni L'nachri. Rava allowed them to sell this grain to Goyim. So you can't say it was before Pesach. So you can't sell it to Jews because it may have become chametz. And by the way, even if we said before that lasisa maybe is allowed, or even according to Rava a mitzvah, that's when you have it's not in the water for very long. Here it was in the water for a significant amount of time. There's a good chance that it became chametz. So the Gemara says Eisvei Rava Balivoi LaRava. So Rava Balivoi said to Rava, I have a contradiction on that. You're telling me you're allowed to sell it to the Goyim, and there's no concern that they're going to resell it to Jews. But we learn in a Mishnah, Beged She'ovad by Kilayim. If you have a garment where Kilayim is lost in it, so in other words, you have, let's say, it's a woolen garment. Somewhere in it there's a linen thread, but you can't tell where it is. So now it's also as kilayim, and there's a different place in a different sugya where the Gemara brings this concept in Avodah Zarah. Tosfos mentions over there that Tosfos and different Rishonim and Achronim talk about different reasons why the thread would not be batal. One explanation is because Tosfos says you can only talk about bittul when you have something is already osur. Here you have linen by itself is mutter, wool by itself is mutter. It's only the combination of them that's osur. So therefore, you can't really talk about a linen thread being bittul and wool. And there's a few other reasons that Rishonim and Achronim give, among them that a thread is choshuv, as opposed to, in other words, we're talking about a whole thread. If you have, now the you do have, let's say, the Mishnayos and Kilayim described over there, and it's brought lahalacha. If, let's say, for example, a person takes fibers of wool and mixes them with some other fibers, and then spins them into thread, and then takes that thread and weaves it together with wool, that would be fine as long as the wool is a mute, because then the wool is bottled in the other fibers. But it's different when it's fibers versus when it's actual threads. If you have a thread, a complete thread of wool or a complete thread of linen, then already that can't be bottled. Rabbi Akiva Eger gives a different reason for it, because you also have a din. Let's say you have a garment that's completely wool, and then you have you suspect that there's a thread of linen in it, and you don't know. What you do is you dye it. Wool and linen take up dye differently. So if you dye the garment, then the linen thread in it is not going to take up the dye as the way the wool does. Then you'll be able to recognize it, and then you'll be able to take it out. So he says, therefore, when you have like that, an alternative, you have a way of finding the thing in there, then you can't say it's batel. Be that as it may, that's the halacha, so that it's not batel. So the Mishnah says, Hareza loyim karenu l'nachri, you're not allowed to sell this garment to a goy, because the kilayim is not recognizable, and therefore the goy may resell it to a Jew, and then the Jew is going to wear it and be over on kilayim without knowing. You're also not allowed to make it into a saddle for a donkey, because the problem is not so much sitting on the saddle itself, because Tosfos points out, because a saddle is tougher. There is an issue in halacha if you have, let's say, for example, a soft pillow or something can't be made of kelayim, because part of it may wrap around your body as you're sitting on it. A saddle is harder. There's not that issue. The issue, rather, is that you may take a piece of the saddle and use it as a patch for your clothing. So therefore, not knowing that there's kelayim in there. Aval osino, it's a tachrichim mess. But you are allowed to use this garment that has kelayim in it as tachrichim for a mess, because anyway, tachrichim are also bahana. So therefore, nobody's going to take a piece of it to use as a patch. Tosfos actually gets into an interesting discussion. We have a concept called loyeg l'rosh. We're not allowed to, for example, this is why we don't wear our tzitzis sticking out in a beis hakvaras, because we don't want to be, or we don't wear tefillin over there, because we don't want to be like making fun of the dead people, like, haha, we can do mitzvahs and you can't. So why don't we have a problem? So why don't we have a problem of them wearing kelayim, which is also an issur? So Tosfos gives an answer that tzitzis is a very important mitzvah. It's considered equal to all the other mitzvahs. So there's an issue of loyeg l'rosh with that. You don't really have such an issue with other kinds. You don't really have an issue like that with other kinds of other mitzvahs. There's a few other answers as well. One of them being that kelayim, the whole problem is you're having hana from it, and the fact is the mess is not having hana. Whatever the case, the point is. Now, continues Rav Belivoy, Lenachri my time aloy. Now, why are you not? Why is the Mishnah saying that you can't sell this garment to a goy? Obviously, the problem is not that the goy himself is going to wear it. A goy doesn't have a mitzvah not to wear shatnez. Lav mishum dehoder mazbin liyisrael. It must be because the goy may resell it to a Jew. The Jew is not going to realize that there's not going to have any way of knowing that there's kelayim in this garment, and he's going to wear it, and he's going to be over. So the same logic over here. How can you allow this wheat that was in this sunken boat? To be sold to goyim, they may resell it to Jews, and the Jews are not going to realize that it's chametz, and then there's going to be a problem. Now, why won't they realize? So again, there's a few explanations in Mefarshim. It might be that in there are some grains that split open, and you have a large amount of grain over there. You're not going to sit and check every grain and notice which ones are split open and which are not. So therefore, you may have chametz in there. Another possibility is the goy may grind it into flour and then sell the flour to Jews, and then some of it may have been chametz already. Some of it may have even been split open, and now you have chametz flour mixed in with the Pesach Dikah flour and so forth. So Hoda Amar Rava. So Rava then changed his mind and said, "You're right. What you should do is Lizabinu Kaba Kaba Lisrael. What you should do is sell it a kab at a time to Jews. Sell small amounts to different Jews. Kihecha Dekalya Kame Pischa. That way it'll all be used up before Pesach." Because like this, if a Jew buys a small amount of chametz before Pesach, again, okay, nowadays we have mechiras chametz, but in those times it wasn't very common to do mechiras chametz, as we talked about before. You usually timed things so that you'd finish off your chametz before Pesach. So fine, if you sell it in small quantities to Jews, then there's less of an issue. Even if it is chametz, then fine, they'll finish it before Pesach anyway. So, no, then we're not. This isn't wheat that we want to make matzah from. This is wheat that was in a ship that sank. So now the question is, this wheat may have become chametz. What are we doing with it? So Rava's original thing was you can sell the whole thing in one big batch to a goy, but Rava Balivoy is pointing out, what if he resells it to Jews? So now the answer is you sell it in small quantities to Jews, and that way they'll, even if it is chametz, they'll use it up before Pesach. There is a different Rambam seems to have a different gusa in it, though, because the Rambam says you sell it in small quantities to goyim. So the idea is, in other words, the goy is much more likely to eat it himself before Pesach. Again, fine, obviously he doesn't have to use it up before Pesach, but since it's a small quantity, there's less of a chance that he's going to sell it, that he's going to resell it to a Jew. The other alternative, some of the Rishonim say, is maybe what you could do, you could maybe sell it to Jews in larger quantities, you just have to inform them that it's chametz. And then they're going to have to know that they're going to have to deal some, or that Suffolk comments at least, and then they're going to have to know what to do with it before Pesach. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Ein moilon esakdeira b'Pesach. You're not allowed to moilon a pot on Pesach. Now that means Rashi describes, we had a similar concept yesterday at the bottom of Lamed Tes Amud Beis. where you take flour and you put it into you put it into a tavshil, into a something that's cooking in a pot in order to thicken it. Like you have a stew, for example, you have a stew or a cholent or whatever, and you put in some pot, you put in some flour in order to thicken it. So yesterday we had Mazutra saying you're not allowed to use for that purpose kimcha davish. You know, you're not allowed to use flour from toasted grain because the grain may not have been fully toasted, and now you're going to put the flour in there and it's going to end up becoming chametz. So now the Braisa says you're not allowed to do that on Pesach. But if you do want to do that, noisin as a kemach v'achachach noisin as a chametz. First you put in the flour, then you put in vinegar. And what the vinegar does is the vinegar, as we said on Amud Aleph, will prevent it from becoming chametz. Because the vinegar, Rashi says, from a vashle, it'll help cook it. So therefore, in other words, cold vinegar by itself may not. But when you have vinegar that's heated up in the pot over there, then that the heat, the combination of the heat and the acid of the vinegar will prevent it from becoming chametz. The Yesh Omrim, af noisin as a chometz v'achachach noisin as a kemach. Others say, and Yesh Omrim usually means Reb Nosson, although here we're going to see in a minute who the Yesh Omrim is, that the Yesh Omrim, af noisin as a chometz v'achachach noisin as a kemach, you could even put in the vinegar and then the flour. In other words, even though then the vinegar gets mixed in with the rest of the ingredients in the pot, and that weakens its potency, that weakens its strength, still you're allowed to do that and then put in the flour, and still it'll help to keep the flour from becoming chometz. So by the way, now how does this fit with that we said that you can't use flour at all? All you can use is flour from, you can't even use flour from toasted grain, Mazutra said. So one possibility is that there we were talking about grain that was toasted over the fire. Maram Rutenberg, I think, says this, that the grain that was toasted over the fire, it may not have been fully toasted. As opposed to here you're talking about, here you're talking about, for example, that, that it was made from grain that was toasted in an oven, where then the heat of the oven is much higher, and therefore there's a much better chance that it was fully. Well, no, actually, no. Here we're talking about regular flour, because we're talking about the question of it becoming chametz. Soon we're going to talk about the possibility of using flour from toasted grain. But right now we're talking about regular flour. So again, the Tanakhama says as long as you put in the vinegar last, then it's fine, because then the vinegar already has an effect. We said on Amud Aleph, it helps. It shrinks things. And then as it heats up, it also prevents the chimutz process from happening. And Rabbi Yehud and Yesh Omrim are saying that you can do it the other way around as well, because the vinegar will still have that effect, even though it's mixed in to the rest of the tavshil. So man Yesh Omrim, who is this Yesh Omrim who allows that? That would be the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanan, we learned in a Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos, ha'ilpos, a pan full of food, bachdera, or pot of food, shehaviron murutachin, you took them off the stove and they're still boiling, so it's a klirishin, but it's off the fire, lo yitin l'seichem tavlin, you're not allowed to put spices into them because the spices are going to get cooked because it's a kli rishon, so therefore you're doing mevashal on Shabbos. But you are allowed to put the spices into a bowl of the food or into a tamchui, which is a large serving bowl, because that's a kli sheni, and a kli sheni is not mevashal. Rabbi Yehuda Omer LaKol HaNoisin. Rabbi Yehuda says you could even put it. Rabbi Yehuda says you could put it into anything. Even in a klisheni, chutz midava sheyesh bei chometz vatzir, except for something that has vinegar or fish juice in it, because vinegar or fish juice are sharp and therefore they have a boiling effect even in a klisheni. So you see, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda holds that even though they're in a klisheni, they're not even in the original pot anymore. It's now in a pot. There's now in a bowl of soup or something, and still he says that it has the same effect. So by the same token, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, in our Braisa over here, can be saying that you're allowed to put in the flour, you're allowed to put in the vinegar first, even though the vinegar is getting mixed in with everything else, and then put in the flour, and the vinegar will still have the same effect on the flour as it would be if you put it in by itself. Okay. So the Gemara asks, why do we need to say it's according to Rabbi Yehuda? Rather, we could say that it's according to Rabbi Yossi, the Tanan or the Tanya, we learned on Omer Aleph. Rabbi Yossi, I'm a Shoran B'chaymetz. We said you have the case of the grains that are swollen up and about to split open, or maybe even actually split open. And Rabbi Yehuda said, Shoran B'chaymetz, you soak them in vinegar, B'chaymetz, same son, and the vinegar closes them up. So by the same token, over here, we should say the same thing. The answer is kiyashmein and leilat Rav Yosi. When do we see Rav Yosi saying that? Hanimila de isli be'ene. Only when the vinegar is by itself. We never find that Rav Yosi would say such a thing when it's in a mixture that it should have the same effect. So therefore, we can't say that this last braisa about the moil and the sakdera would be according to Rav Yosi. Necessarily, it has to be according to Rav Yehuda. Okay. The Gemara continues. Ula Omar, echad zeva, echad ze osur. Ula says either way, whether you put in the flour first or the vinegar first is osur. Mishum, because either way, there's a chance that you may do it wrong and it becomes chometz. And leich leich amunin, nazira, we tell to the nazir, go, schur, schur, around, lakanam aloy sikrav, don't come anywhere near the vineyard. So in other words, we don't want to do things where there's a chance, even where there's a chance that something is going to become chometz. So the same thing over here, where it's going to be osur, and the same thing over here. Okay, continues the Gemara. Rapapi sharila the burdiki the bereshkulosa. Rapapa allowed the chefs in the household of the reshkulosa lemimcha kedera b'chassisi that they could use to thicken a stew. They could use chassisi. Now Rashi translates chassisi as kimcha davishona, which is what we talked about before, flour from toasted grain. Now before we said it's osur, so then one explanation, really, Maram Rutenberg says there's a difference whether it was toasted directly over the fire or in the oven. Again, if it's done over the fire, then the heat is not that intense. So it may not get fully toasted. Later on, you grind it up into flour. That flour could become chametz. On the other hand, if it was done in an oven, the heat is higher, then therefore it would be mutter. Tosfos, on the other hand, says that no, chassisi actually means flour made from lentils. And Tosfos uses the expression that flour from lentils ain daukum lovely de chimutz kol kach. It doesn't become so chametz, which becomes an interesting discussion. What do you mean? I mean, flour lentils are not one of the five. Are not one of the five minim. They don't become chametz. You have some rishonim who learn from the words of Tosfos. The implication is there is a little bit of chimutz that happens. It's just not real chimutz. This is a source for the concept of kitnius. This is one reason to say why maybe kitnius, according to Minhag Ashkenaz, are also. Because we're saying they become slightly chametz, just not fully chametz. On the other hand, the mainstream understanding is that kitnius is not also because of that, but rather because they're easily confused with grain. Many kinds of kitnius sometimes have grain mixed in. Many of them are grown in the same and processed in the same way. Many kinds of kitnius, I mean, are grown and processed in the same way as grain, and therefore the men have developed to say that they're also. Even among Sfaradim, who use kitnius, they have to check them over very carefully. The Kafahayim, for example, a major Saudi posik talks about that one time in where he's from, they use rice on Pesach, but one time somebody was checking their rice and found wheat in it. So then after that they started being more machmir on it. Omar Rava. So Rava says, how could you allow them to use chassisi? How can you be matir such a thing in a place where there are a lot of avodim in the household of the reshkavos? So the avodim are very careless with things of isur. If you allow them with chassisi, whether it is Rashi saying that chassisi means flour from toasted grain, or like Tosfos that it means that it means flour from lentils, or even actually I think you have the understanding of the Rambam that the chassisi means matzah meal. Even then, when there are avodim, they can get careless, and therefore, how can you allow such a thing, even in the house of the Rishkolos, because there are avodim and avodim are careless on these things, which again is a source not only from saying maybe that kidney is also, it's also a source maybe for saying that gebrucht is also. Same problem. Then how can we say that we're more careful than those avodim, and therefore maybe we shouldn't allow it? Ikadamri, another version of the story goes that Rava Gufa machila kidra b'chassisi, that Rava himself used chassisi in order to thicken a stew. So we see, according to the second version, that Rava is actually saying it's allowed. Maybe, yeah, in a place where there's avodim, not, but ordinarily you would be allowed to. It's a Pesach thicker stew we're talking about, yeah. But so to use regular flour, then Ula had said you can't, whether you use vinegar before or after, because there's too much of a chance that it can become chametz. But if you're using chassisi, whether chassisi means flour from toasted grain, again, like Maharam Rutenberg says, where it was toasted in an oven, and therefore it was definitely toasted properly, or whether we're talking about lentil flour, like Tosfos says, or matzah meal, like the Rambam says, either way, the second version is that Rava himself is doing it because it is mutter, but in the first version, Rava is saying that in a place where there's avodim, you should be more careful. And this is a source where the post can say, based on that, is why we should be careful with things like kitnius and gebrucht and whatever, is because we're not necessarily more careful than the avodim of the Reish Kolosa. Shkayach, everyone.
But for Kitnios, the rationale.